listeners, Marty here. It is Friday, September 30th, as I'm recording this, and tomorrow, October 1st, is the one-year anniversary of the opening of Expo 2020 Dubai. I have to tell you, I miss Expo so much. It was such a wonderful experience. I was lucky enough to be able to go twice and be there for the final day, March 31st of this year. And I just want to share that experience with as many people as possible. So in honor of the one-year anniversary, we're bringing you one of my favorite episodes that I really enjoyed putting together, which is all about the Japan Pavilion, one of the most exclusive, hard-to-get-into pavilions at the Expo, but one of the most intriguing and interesting experiences available. It really is a lot of fun. It's meaningful. It teaches you about Japan and about Expo in a way that I just think is delightful. I hope you do too. We've got more episodes coming soon. I know we've been on a bit of a hiatus lately, but there's more in the works. You're going to see some stuff real quick here. Thanks for listening and enjoy the Japan Pavilion from Expo 2020 Dubai.
I had to remind myself of some of the details, but I remember how I felt in that experience. The feeling sticks with me. I think that's the mark of a truly remarkable experience. I can remember how it made me feel.
Konnichiwa, minasan. Yokoso. I'm your host, Philip, and today on In Park Tracks, we take you through one of the most popular country experiences at Expo 2020 Dubai, the Japan Pavilion. Expo closes at the end of March, so if you didn't get the opportunity to go, or if you didn't have time to wait through the hour-plus long queue to enter the pavilion, this may be your chance at understanding what went into creating this immersive, entertaining, informative, and technologically advanced experience. InPark publisher Martin Pilecki brought together a couple of fellow Expo-goers and some organizers from the Japan Pavilion to talk about the experience and how it successfully conveyed the pavilion designer's message. For a highlight video of the Japan Pavilion experience, check out InPark Magazine's YouTube channel. You can also experience the Japan Pavilion virtually at the link in our show notes.
This is Martin Plicky here. I've got two friends with me in the studio. We've got Tina Kreitlow, Paul Williams. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
The three of us got to go to Expo 2020 Dubai. We collectively thought that one of the most interesting experiences was the Japan Pavilion. Is that right?
Correct.
And we actually talked to a couple of the staff that worked at the pavilion.
Kenichi Ishihara from JETRO, Japan External Trade Organization.
Aiko Yabunaka, Secretary General for the Japan Pavilion.
We'll be hearing from both of them in a little bit here. But I kind of wanted to start out talking about the experience. And we're going to start with the building itself. It's a giant white building in front of a big pond, right?
It is. It was definitely one of the standout pavilions throughout Expo, which is this beautiful, white, very ornate appearance surrounded by water with a bridge taking you into the main space.
Yeah, it was pretty ethereal. It seemed to kind of float above the little bodies of water with the bridge going through and kind of floated in the air.
And the outside, I would say, it looked almost like scaffolding, right? There was white scaffolding with these little flags or sails that kind of were reminiscent of, you know, origami, I think. Mm-hmm. And those were all along the facade of the building. But actually, we spoke to Kenny, and he told us exactly what the building was designed for.
It's designed by Yuko Nagayama, Japanese architecture. And she tried to build a bridge between Arab and Japan. So she found the design come from arabesque and also Japanese asanoha patterns. It's more like origami, you know. So it's a bridge.
He was so nice.
Everyone was nice,
yes,
right?
Yes, the experience from beginning to end is what you would expect from the Japan Pavilion. And their attention to detail was remarkable.
Everything was coordinated from the moment you started through to the end. All the staff were working in sync.
And I should also probably point out that you two are not expo experts in any way, right? You are.
This was first timers for us, yes.
But you were there just to take it in, right? You weren't there for any special purposes.
No, not other than to help and support you with the magazine.
So let's start talking about the actual pavilion experience. So once you get to enter the pavilion first, you get a little briefing. You sit down and they hand you a phone and headphones. Yeah. And so then your device assigned you a flower, right? A Japanese flower.
Senesso. I am a Senesso.
I don't remember mine. Do you remember yours?
Yeah, I don't. It was a really long word. I remember that.
And then you enter the pavilion. You enter this room and it's full of mist. It was dreamlike. And there's some kind of spotlights blinking from the ceiling. It felt to me like you were walking into a dream. And on the left, it's a wall made up of, I would call them tassels, right? Or strings.
Yes, yes.
That hang from the ceiling to the floor and create this white wall on the side.
Yeah, it carried that etherealness of the building from the external with the projection. We saw different images projected onto these long tassels. So it didn't seem permanent. It seemed like something that could change, and it certainly did.
Right. So the projection then, as you were alluding to, it happens on the screen of tassels and on the floor, too. Like when you walk in, it's the ocean or the beach, and the water kind of rushes out to your feet. And then it's really a showcase of Japanese, I would say, imagery and history.
Culture,
yeah.
Yep.
And that's a few minutes of that. And then what happens?
So four windows to Japan sort of open up based on the seasons of Japan. And then when you can walk through this now, you're walking through the door that you're most interested in, and we'll pause right there only because what we didn't mention earlier is that the device that you have is tracking all of your movement throughout their pavilion, getting the sense of what you're drawn to, whether it's the scenery, whether it's the season, whether it's, and we'll get into this a little bit later, some of the other spaces, but it's tracking where you're spending your time and what doorways you're walking into that will lead to a really cool surprise at the end.
So you walk through the tassels into the next room based on the season you prefer. And that room also, I believe, was full of mist.
Full of mist.
Full of mist. And these sort of like multi-plane screens that stretched from the ceiling basically to the floor. And they were translucent fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like four or five of them kind of back to back with maybe a couple inches in between. And there were images projected onto those screens. And there was three or four sets of these, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, I don't know, 5 minutes to wander around this room and look at the images that are presented on these screens.
I recall different kinds of Japanese personas. So there's a traditional woman or there's a businessman in the 1920s. So they represent a different imagery that I've seen before that have represented Japan. And it was like you were meeting the personalities of Japan and its history.
And your device was also sort of interacting with what you were seeing, as I recall, mm-hmm. on the screens as well.
Right. They encouraged us to roam about and see what the other panels were offering.
And so it was this sort of combined, very individual experience, right? You're with your own device, but the staff is guiding you around and in a group, right? You're with other people. And actually, Aiko had some comments about why they chose to use both the devices and the staff to move people through the pavilion.
I think you have saw our wonderful staff. So that's why it's like a guided tour. So they are guiding you and they're going together. So this is because we want you to interact with each other. I know when you go into a pavilion and when you stand in the line, you don't really interact with people. But our staffs and also the smartphones is actually making you interact anyway. So this is something that helping you. Like, it's my first time to see you, but when we walk around, we feel like we were friends from before. So this is some of the ways that we are doing to encourage people to interact in our pavilion.
So then after that room, The mood changed quite a bit, right?
Very drastically, actually. You're moving from really the culture and history of Japan and now to the very innovative side of what they do. It's a relatively large space that we're in that all had themed Matate areas. Matate is miniature, and everything is in these miniature domes. There's a space section, there's a shopping section, there's a urban center section that you're seeing.
Yeah, I have to say this is one of the parts of the entire experience that I enjoyed the most, because it revealed something about the Japanese way of learning and maybe thought, in that you learn about one thing through another thing. And so we went into this exhibit area that had many different small displays of unexpected things that were put together to create a new environment. So it may be popsicles that are laid out like they're a beach, and then there's little people sitting on these popsicles. Or another great one was products you find on your desk in your office that were laid out like it looked like a hotel with a swimming pool, and characters were jumping off of the tape dispenser, but it looked like it was a springboard. Mm-hmm. And just that concept of how one thing is connected to another, and we can learn about that one thing through something else. And there were just so many different examples of this. And it really took it from this big experience and this kind of ethereal, big, less concrete experience down to something very, to the tiniest detail, and drew your attention into those details.
Yeah. I mean, it was just so unique and different. But then again, your device is sort of seeing and tracking where you are drawn to.
It started out kind of serious to me. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it was this fun, like wondrous place. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're looking at all these miniature, really creative artworks that were fun and enjoyable. So it just changed the mood as well. There was a sense of wonder in that space that was different than what was in the previous space. Mm-hmm.
And then the staff asked us to look at our devices. And if it was green, you were supposed to go to this door. And if it was red, you were supposed to go to the other door. And we actually got split up. Mm-hmm. You two went to the red door and I went to the green door. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't realize until today that they were two different experiences. I thought we had experienced the same thing. But Tina, tell us about what you saw in your
room. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you're directed to stand to one side. And what you're seeing are images, really, of the global social ills that we have. So the room that Paul and I were in were just constant scrolling images of poverty and famine.
Hunger,
and cyberbullying.
Right?
I mean, it was just so powerful that you stand there and you're just watching this scroll over and over and over again. And you can't help but be moved that so much of this is going on around the world and how much we are the cause of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At some point, so you're watching and you feel somewhat, you're kind of separated or removed from it. And then the staff again step in and tell us to turn around. And we turn around, and all of a sudden we're looking into a mirror where we are ourselves presented in front of these pieces. And it's really, to me, it was a powerful reminder that we are both the source of these problems, but also potentially the solution.
Right. And this is, I have to say, out of all of the pavilions that we explored, this is the one for me, and in this particular section of the Japan Pavilion, for me, created the most personal responsibility. So here we are, we're standing in front of all of these images, just scrolling, and you're seeing the words coming up on this screen with your own image in there. You can't help but be moved. And I mean, personally, I was brought to tears over it. I really was.
And I missed the whole thing because I was in a different room with different people.
What was your focus?
So my focus was on the environment and nature. And so there were pictures of beautiful forest scene and foxes jumping through the woods and deer poking their heads around the corner. And then it's like turned into a big forest fire and pollution and smoke, and the critters are all running for their lives. And then these words pop up about conservation and sustainability. And then we'd had to turn around and you're looking
with yourself in that image. Yeah. Just
see yourself part of the solution.
Like Oof, it was deep.
And so from that high emotional moment, it kind of ends, but the scenery pulls back and you're looking at the Earth. It's like a mosaic. Mm-hmm. And these little images become the planet Earth, and you kind of follow the globe into the fifth scene of the pavilion, and the mist returns.
Mm-hmm. And this section is actually the theme of the pavilion, which is where ideas meet.
And so the center of the room is a giant globe that is the Earth projected, and around the room, it's a circular room, it's a 360-degree projection, so the walls are all projected. And what happens next?
Well, they tell us to watch for our avatars.
So you actually find your flower name, I thought was how
you, it Yep, worked. You find your flower name. So I'm looking for Sinesso on this space.
Did you figure out your flower name yet?
Yeah, my flower name is Futara Shizuka.
It just sounds like a beautiful flower.
It does, yeah. It's quite powerful and enigmatic and energetic.
Yeah, so you're finding your flower somewhere on this 360-degree wall, and you're directed to go and stand with your flower. What happens then is sort of the data that's been collected on what you have been drawn to throughout the four previous sections of the pavilion start to come to life by creating your individual personalized avatar that we are told there will not ever be another one exactly like yours, because this is based on your personal likes and dislikes throughout that experience.
Yeah, just like in real life, we are the end result of all of our experiences leading up to that moment. And this was an same experience, but done in 60 minutes as it was tracking us through the exhibit.
Yeah. So I do recall that it presented some statistics in that room as well, like where everybody was from. Because I believe when we first got our device, we had to type in which country we were from. Mm-hmm. And it showed on the display in that room, you know, we were the only three people from North America in that group. But I also remember the device recording mentioning that this group of people in this experience, us, is never going to happen again. This is a one-time only magical experience that will never be repeated. And so you have this one opportunity to make it be a valuable time together. And I think that was sort of a lesson to take out, mm-hmm. like into the world too. So I was the Hiragao flower, if anyone is curious. Now we have all our flower names out there. And then the avatars started dancing, right? Like, and we danced around the room, again, guided by the staff.
Right, the avatars followed us. So as we danced, the avatars danced. They mimicked our movement, which again, I find to be so unique in this whole process.
And they interacted with the other people around us. So again, this is a moment in time shared with a specific group of people that will never meet again. That was a central theme, was that we have an opportunity to work together to seize the moment to make change.
So then at some point, I do remember the mist starts to like really kick in heavily again in that room, and the focus comes back to the globe in the center, and the mist, it really becomes like the globe disappears and it just becomes this ball of light that we're enveloped in. And actually Aiko sort of explained for us what they envision that moment to mean.
At the end, you will see the whole room covered by the mist, which means we're borderless and we're living in the same one world.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Just really this sense of everybody becoming one, and that we are all in this together. We were in this space, yet at this moment, the mist is really rather dense, and so you couldn't see the people next to you. But their whole messaging behind it is that we've all just sort of blended together. The world is borderless.
Like
she said, yeah,
like I said, borderless.
The mist really helps to create more of that sense of a less defined world. And the whole experience started out that way, and it ends that way as well. And so I thought it was a fitting way for us to go into the sixth and final area, which takes us into the next expo, which will be held in Osaka, Japan.
The final room of the pavilion is really where the organizers are asking us as visitors to share our ideas and thoughts and hopes. not only for the future and for the world, but particularly for Expo 2025. Mm-hmm. Let's talk just really quick about the technology in the pavilion, because this was like a super technology rich pavilion.
I think one of the things that was critical to the experience was how the staff interacted with the guests. And without a good staff experience and staff direction, you could have gotten lost in the experience. Mm-hmm. But this was a finely tuned experience that married the technology with the human beings who were the staff who were helping to guide us through that experience. And I thought that was one of the things that really stood out with the Japan Pavilion, that they did that better than almost anybody else at Expo.
Interestingly, Tina, you asked Aiko what she thought the most important technology was, right?
I did ask her that because, I mean, there was just so much technology. And so I did. I asked her what was the best piece of technology used to deliver their storyline. And I was shocked. I was absolutely stunned by her response.
Well, let's listen.
I think from the technology side, we have chosen the Panasonic's UltraFine Mist. So this is actually the Nano E technology for purifying the air, but this time it's designing the air. So it's like an experience that gives the immersive dream. We thought this is the technology that can help us in conveying our message.
Aiko, she said mist of all things. Aiko said mist. Out of everything that we went through, mist.
Yeah, it's nano E technology, right?
Yeah, it was fascinating.
I wonder.
And they were so proud of it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it was impressive. Just the whole pavilion, the entire experience.
Well, so tell me, what was the overall meaning for you visiting the Japan Pavilion?
I have to say, in no other pavilion did I leave feeling so moved to personal responsibility. So, yeah, for me, it was about making life change to make our world a better place.
And I would agree with that. What I really appreciated about it was a journey. It took us on it, and it, you know, they advertise it. It's 60 minutes. And it was a journey from this ethereal place where you walk into the first room of mist and you don't really know where the boundaries are. And then you go into a room that's full of detail where you come down from the 30,000 foot view down to the smallest detail of the mitate. And then you're going to the next room where you're connecting with the environment that we as human beings have created and learn a sense of responsibility for that, but also that we can be the solution to the problems that we've created. That our experience as individuals is also reliant on our experiences as a community of human beings. And so I think ultimately it just took us on a journey that got us to that sense of how we connect to each other and how we have responsibility for our planet and for our situation.
I love it. That's fantastic.
Being a little bit further away from the experience, I remember how I felt in that experience, and I had to remind myself of some of the details. But the feeling sticks with me. And I think that's the mark of our truly remarkable experience, is that I can remember how it made me feel. And it's something that I can carry forward.
And it was very Japanese and very Expo. It represented all the best things of Expo and all the wonderful things of Japan, too. And while a lot of pavilions did that, nobody quite did it in this way.
It certainly gets us ready and geared up for Osaka 2025. Stay tuned, because more is to come from InPark Magazine in Osaka.
Great. Well, Tina and Paul, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. We had such a great time together. It was fun reliving these memories with you about the Japan Pavilion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was fantastic.
This has been InPark Tracks, the audio companion to InPark Magazine. For more information and to sign up for a free subscription, visit inparkmagazine.com/subscribe. InPark Tracks is a production of InPark Magazine. Our executive producers are Philip Hernandez and Martin Palicki. Today's episode was recorded and edited by Martin Palicki, with post-production by David Swope. Music in this episode is Fuji by Tubebacker. The InPark staff includes Judith Rubin, Joe Kleiman, and Jordan Suha.